With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello. Welcome to the Exian Theatre Podcast. In this mini-episode, we bring you a very special treat. Poet Luke Wright talks about his writing process and his fringe shows What I Learned from Johnny Bevan and Stay at Home Dandy. Make sure you stay until the end where Luke reads us one of his pieces called Alice.
Hello, my name is Luke Wright. I would describe myself as a poet, but this year I've written my first play. I guess it is a play. People appear accepting that. I mean, for me, really, the process of writing it was like writing a very, very long narrative poem, because it's all in verse. In fact, I keep getting reviews saying, oh, it's part in verse, part not. It's all in verse. It's just that the beauty of blank verse is that you can make it seem very prosaic, really, which is necessary at some points because you need something a bit more sort of realistic. And that's what I do. So I guess I'm a poet and a playwright now. Sounds a bit grand. I'm not sure I'm ready to call myself that yet. I saw that written. Someone wrote that the other day, and I felt a bit strange. But yeah, I think it will be the start of more playwriting. Definitely, the thrill I've got from doing What I Learned from Johnny Bevan is second to none. I think doing something at a piece, and I was introducing Kate Tempest at the book festival last night, and she's doing a reading from a book, Hold Your Own, which is a series of sort of kind of connected poems, definitely a strong theme going through the book, and she decided rather than read them and chat in between, she would glue them all together, and it's so much more impressive and effective as a piece of theatre. And I think really essentially if you're I'm doing this other show called Stay at Home Dandy. And it's my best poetry show to date. I really like it. It's great fun. And there's a lot to be said for someone chatting away to an audience, making jokes, doing some poems. But I don't know, maybe I feel like it's kind of somewhere, that's somewhere in between stand-up and theatre. And people, a little bit like that mix, they really do. You know? But when you just do the single poem for an hour, it feels so pure and right. It really excites me. And so I think, yes, I think definitely I'm going to go home and I think, I'm going to write a few poems because I need to write some poems because I haven't really, you know, that's still my bread and butter and I haven't written it for a while and it'd be good to do that. But really, I want to write another play. When I was doing my early sort of poetry shows, James Grieve used to direct me and we had a script. I used to script all the bits in between. And I had real trouble learning those. I used to really struggle on learning those because it wasn't in verse. Poems is fine a bit, and I don't write poetry shows like that anymore. I write poetry shows on stage, so I take the poems on stage and I make up introductions as I go along, find out what works, you know, get a good audience, you can really lean on them, and, you know, and so it's all ad-libbed. So now it's much the same every night now because it's you know the poetry show I've been running all year, but it's all written on stage, which is a very exciting thing to do. I really do enjoy that. I really enjoy coming up with introductions on stage, finding where the love puts on. I was talking to Paul Sinar about this, the stand-up, and he was saying, yeah, because it's not stand-up what you do, is it? And I said, no, it's not. I think there's an artifice to stand-up that there perhaps isn't to introductions to the poem. So you're very honest about poetry gig, because you come on stage and you go, oh, hello, I'm going to read you some poems, and this poem is about such and such, and you might go off on tangents and stuff, but essentially you are introducing poems. There are a couple of moments in my show which feel a bit more like stand-up, but without the poems there, this feels a bit weird. To most people, it's a stand-up, you know, it's a man standing on stage making funnies, you know. But I think it's integrally linked to those poems, and I wonder what it'd be like if I try and took some of those ideas on stage. Yeah, it might work, but they'd have to be differently framed. And I think framing is really, really important. There's a sort of dishonesty to stand-up in a way, because you're coming on stage, I mean, less so when you've got these sort of more complex sort of narrative-driven shows, but essentially you come on stage and what's not acknowledged is that they are there to laugh and you are there to make them laugh. But you know, this idea, this is like, oh, this has just occurred to me. And there's a suspension of disbelief where I think that's quite the same with poetry, because this, you know, people know it's a pre-written poem, you know. And then the introductions feel genuinely more spontaneous than that. You know? So Tracy's a totally made-up story. You know, I was driving through the Dartford toll one day and I saw this woman sitting in the toll booth, and I just, it wasn't even her, it was more like you know, I wanted to write about a toll area. Because when you stop at the motorway and you look around, you realise how massive it is. It's a huge space, just in width-wise it's massive. And you're like, this is like a non-space. It's such a hostile environment for a human being. And it's really hit home when you stop in there. You see, finally you're going at speed. So it's really strange.
It's so desolate. It's so isolated.
Very desolate, well, yeah. It's really, in that respect, really, really poetic as well. Yeah. Like, so I really wanted to write about a toll booth, and then, you know, because I like alliteration, it became Tracy in the toll booth. And then, you know, I started to imagine her for about, you know, just for a year, that just sat in my notebook, Tracy toll booth Tracy. In fact, I called her toll booth Tracy at first. So I think obviously I was planning something a little bit sort of lighter, maybe. And then, yeah, I just started writing because I had to do a commission for something, I think for homework. I can't remember what the theme was now, but that was my homework poem. And then as I was writing it, you know, the mum and the alcoholism sort of came into it, really. Because once you have a strong sense of a character, even just a glimpse of them, then the story comes from there. There's a lovely Virginia Woolf speech she gives called Mr. Bennet and Mrs. Brown. So she's talking about the difference between what her and Joyce and people like that, although she doesn't really like Joyce. She describes Joyce as a man who feels that in order to breathe, he must first smash all the windows. but she talks about this desire to sort of explore the psyche of characters, whereas, you know, Arnold Bennett, I think it is, you know, Victorian writers would say, this is Mr. So-and-so, and they describe his house and his belongings and his wife, not what's in his mind. And she describes her ideal characters as Mrs. Brown, and she's chasing Mrs. Brown through you know, a shopping precinct, well, not, you know, shopping precincts, but, you know, or through a railway station or through the streets, and she's just trying to grab a hold of her. Because once she grabs a hold of her, then the character will come to her. And that's true not only of characters, but just of simple bits of writing. I just get a sense of a poem, and I can just reel it in from there. And that was certainly the case with Tracy. I just had the sense of what she was going to be like. And yes, and people like, you know, obviously people I've met inform that in some way, but you just sort of take little bits, you almost subconsciously are taking little bits and put them together.
I'm going to read you a bit of Alice. I'm going to read you Alice. So this is a poem that almost made it into Stay at Home Dandy and didn't, for whatever reason. I can't think why I didn't. I think it's just Stay at Home Dandy, it's pretty long already. And it's about a woman who she's got a young baby and she's, you know, she's losing a grip, really. It seems he's always late these days. He races off, he stays away. It seems he's always late, he's always late, he's always late. Her baby came in summertime, the suck and coo in early June, and life, the bills, the work, the stress, became an endless afternoon of kissing, feeding, washing, changing, at the beck of whimpered whims, and Alice, in this dreamlike lilt, deferred to him. She followed him. Let's move, my love. The life we dream, let's leave this smog, this housing scheme, this city shouts, this rat-a-tat, let's find a sleepy cul-de-sac. Now Alice wanders croquet lawns, his footsteps to the checkered hall, their things, their life won't fill this space, now everything she is feels small. His mother comes to help and fuss, the pristine queen of village life, she tidies things and clinks and sings, she proffers tarts and tart advice, and Alice, falling through her dreams in half-sleep, sees him choosing ties, but when she wakes he's never there, it's silent save the baby's cries. It seems he's always late these days, he races off, he stays away, it seems he's always late, he's late, he's late, he's late, he's late, and what to do but watch this thing, and catch her sleep and sit and slim as baby's tears become a lake, and Alice tries her best to swim, then dry her mind with radio and daytime tellies, tit for tat, they eat me, drink me, who are you? Oh, that's the greatest puzzle, that. And Alice knew, she knew her life, she gave herself such good advice, but cast adrift in time and wealth, it's queer, she doesn't know herself. But still he's late these days, he races off, he stays away, it seems he's always late, he's late, he's late, he's late, he's late, and Alice reads, and Alice cooks, and Alice eats, and Alice sews, and Alice feeds, and Alice coos, and Alice cries, and Alice goes to rhyme time, playgroup, baby space, a throng of women in her face, it's mothers, never dads, a clinking tea time, loud and mad, they gather round, all kind of mumsy, Alice feels huge and clumsy, children and their toxic fumes, there isn't room, she's not a thing, a thing to say, it sounds so sharp, the room's
a sway, her nerves recoil, her senses fray. She has to take her baby, take her baby, take her baby far, 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 far away. And still he's late these days. He races off, he stays away. It seems he's always late, he's late, he's late, he's late, he's late. He's eat me, drink me, who are you? The tick-tocks of the kitchen clock invade her thoughts and stop her talk. Her keys no longer fit the lock. Her babies weep, seep into sleep, and night shine shadows slowly creep until it snuffles, squeals, and swines. Its mouth's a snout, my babe's a swine, my babe, my baby's run away. He rushes off, he never stays. The queen is here, and still he's late. Her baby cries, another lake. Oh, eat me, drink. Her thoughts fill till she cannot think. Oh, eat me, drink. Her thoughts fill till she cannot think. Oh, eat me, drink. The queen is talking, soot and lead. She's miles high, near 2 miles high. She's off her head, she's off her head. She's off her head. And still he's late. He's late today. He never comes. He stays away. He's always late. Forever late. He's 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 late.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with another Fringe First Timer next time. Until then, go to axiandmagazine.com or follow @theatremagazine on Twitter. Bye.